Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. We're so pleased to have everyone here with us today. I'm Lisa Branch, and I'm here with my colleagues, Judge Britt Grant and Judge Jerry Joe Flatt. And we're certainly pleased to be with you this morning by Zoom, but we would be more happy, and hopefully we will be more happy in the future when we will start meeting in person. And I hope that point is almost upon us. But I appreciate everybody being here. And I'm sure everybody's familiar with by now that we work on a traffic light system. And what you'll see the clock tick down. It will start off at green. And when you have 2 minutes left, it will switch to yellow, which means you should start paying attention to wrapping up your argument. And when your time has expired, it will flash to red. Mr. Robinson is our courtroom deputy and timekeeper. As we proceed today, we've got two cases that we're going to hear, and I'm going to call the first case. The first case is United States versus Jose Miguel Cordero. Darlene Calzone Barrera is the attorney for the appellant, and Yvette Rhodes is the attorney for the appellee. And Ms. Barrera, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
And you've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal, I see?
Yes, I did.
Okay, please proceed.
May it please the court. I was court appointed to represent Jose Cordero with regards to a motion that he had filed with the district court to modify the conditions of his probation and also to terminate his probation. The offense conduct happened around 2006. Defendant was in the military in Afghanistan. He wound up having marital problems that resulted in a divorce, and he went through a very stressful time. During that period of time, he paid to have a video of child pornography put in his computer. It appears that he may not have accessed that, but anyway, it was on his computer. He pled guilty to that charge. And as a result of pleading guilty, he received a year of prison time and then 10 years of supervised release. Since that time, the defendant has, when he filed these motions, he had served 40 months out of the 120 months that he had been sentenced to do on supervised release. He had remarried and had two children. Unfortunately, his oldest child, which is now 10, has Down syndrome and has been unable to speak. And so his wife is very dedicated to taking care of that child. And he has been trying to make a living with a business that he started that installed smart home products. And some of those products include being able to command certain things in your home just by voice. He works in very high-end homes. One of the conditions of his probation is that he has to tell his customer that he is on federal probation and that he is a sexual offender. Many times that results in him losing his job. So he was very motivated at that time to see if he could terminate his probation. He was also given a condition that he could not access the internet. And even back in 2014, when he started his probation, that was a very difficult condition. But now it has become almost impossible to operate a business without accessing the internet.
Ms. Barrera, you would concede, though, to the extent that you're challenging the third party notification provision in and of itself, that would be untimely and barred by an appeal waiver, right? You're just here today dealing with the modification issue.
Your Honor, as far as the modification issue, the modification to terminate, is that what the court is addressing?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. With regards to that issue, that's what we concentrated our arguments on. And what basically happened is that the judge issued an endorsed order denying all of the motions, including the early termination motion. And the way it was done, where it was very difficult to appeal that because there were no specifics given as to why Judge Scrivens denied the motion to terminate probation. And it becomes kind of a guess as to why that motion was denied. And there are probably many good reasons that the court could have utilized to deny the motion to terminate the probation. The government does an excellent job in its brief of outlining the laundry list of all of the reasons why the district court could have denied the motion for the termination of supervised release.
But Mr. Cordero discussed Section 3553A factors at length in the motion for early termination and attached several decisions from other district courts conducting the proper analysis. So why isn't that sufficient for this court to conclude that the district court properly considered those factors in denying the motion?
And Your Honor, I think that that's the government's position, is that the court viewed everything, all of the arguments. However, we're just kind of guessing at what the court did consider. While the district court is not required to articulate each factor that it reached, considered in reaching its decision, it's not possible from this record to determine what it was that had the judge decide that the probation or the supervised release should not be terminated. And I know that the court needed to consider the history and characteristics of the defendant, and as Your Honor just mentioned, Mr. Cordero had spoken about that extensively. There was also, in the government's response, an issue about that there was a statutory minimum for supervised release for this crime, and we don't know if the court may have considered that and felt as if she could not give him less than 5 years because that was the statutory minimum, even though that's not the law. We don't know if Judge Scrivens committed some error in her analysis because we do not have the reasons why she denied the motion.
I've got a question for you on something else. I want to make sure I understand your argument. Is it your position that the current reporting requirements and the current internet requirements were part and parcel of his original supervision plan and sentence, or is it your contention that those are new and different modifications in some way that the government sought and received permission to carry out?
Well, they were part of his original supervised release. However, they were not, at the beginning, he was being allowed to access the internet for work purposes. And that was very important to him because having a small business, he had to access emails, banking, advertising, directions to places, web pages, viewing who the competition was, ordering things from Amazon, all of those things. And he was allowed to access the internet for work purposes. But there became a time when the probation officer wanted him to have a polygraph examinations, which were not part of the original conditions. And he refused to do that. And so
the court did not compel the polygraph, correct?
No, but as a result, then the probation officer went with the no access of the internet completely. As a matter of fact, the internet was turned off from his home where his wife could not access it, nor could the children access it for learning purposes. And, you know, in 2013, when that condition was set, we were all using the internet, but today you can't barely operate a business without having access to the internet.
But that was part of his original conditions of supervised release. The defendant shall not possess or use a computer with access to any online service at any location without written approval from the probation officer. So that's that condition has been in existence. Sentenced.
That is correct. That condition has been in existence. The things that have happened is that prior approval is a little bit difficult because what he had was prior approval to use it for business purposes. Right now, the way that that condition is being managed is if he wants to send an email to a client, he has to ask the probation officer for permission, and it's just not a viable option to get permission, written permission from the probation officer every time he wants to access the internet. So it's our belief that it is much more sweeping and broad than it needs to be.
Well, but that gets back to my original point. If this was part of his original sentence and the condition of supervised release, and he did not appeal it then, that it would be an untimely appeal and it would also be barred by his appeal waiver, right? If this is the same condition, just now he is struggling with it more so than he was at the beginning. If it's the same condition, how is this not barred?
It's the same condition, Your Honor, but it's being managed, and I think the prior written approval section is what is vague, because you could get prior written approval and say, I need to use the internet for my work. And, you know, please give me permission to use the internet for everything that's related to my work. But the way it's being managed now, it's you have to get written permission every time you want to use the internet. So if you want to send a contract via email to your client that wants to install the smart home, you have to get permission to do that.
Well, let me ask you on a related note. So we've just talked about the internet restriction, the notification of clients, that's part of the original condition, correct? It's just being managed differently.
That's correct.
Okay.
It was not being enforced. He had to tell his probation officer where he was working and what he was doing, but now he actually has to tell the client that he is on federal probation and that he is a sex offender.
And how is it that you believe that Packingham relates to this case when Packingham was not a case involving supervised release?
And I realized that it was after the defendant had completed the term of imprisonment or supervised release, but the court goes to a good explanation that it should not be a more sweeping or broad. These restrictions should not be more sweeping or broad than what they need to be. They do need to protect the vulnerable witnesses, and a restriction that he could not access any child pornography or even any websites that deal particularly with children, but not to be able to have access to the internet at all is broader than what it needs to be.
Thank you, Ms. Barrar. Ms. Rhodes, you may proceed.
Morning, may I please report. It wasn't an abuse of discretion for the district court to retain all conditions of supervised release as it did in this case in resolving Cordero's motions for early termination and modification of his supervised release. The court on three occasions addressed the supervised release condition, at first in 2013, then in 2017 when it addressed the probation request for clarification of those conditions. And then at 2018, which is at issue here, when it denied his motions for clarification and termination and modification of the terms of supervision. In the first of those two instances, the court explained its sentencing decision fully yet succinctly in light of the factors and circumstances of the case and the Section 3553A factors. In the last instance, which is what is at issue here, the court referred back to its prior decisions in 2013 and 2017 and determined that the supervised release conditions were still necessary. The court.
What should we make of the fact that the government asked the court for permission to take this shift in its application of the earlier conditions?
The government didn't ask for any shift. The government asked for the court to clarify what it meant when it imposed the notification condition and tangentially. How the probation officer should enforce the contact with minors provision, and also the contact with minor provision, the internet access provision, and the notification provisions are all kind of part and parcel of the same things here in a way that it would be different in a other kind of a case, because first of all, this crime involved the internet. That's how it committed the crime. But his occupation involved installing smart home technology, and he needs the internet in order to do that. And his occupation also involved contact with minors, because he admits that he was wanting to install this type of technology in private homes. And we just
think that the homes are typically unoccupied. I'm not sure that he's admitted that his occupation involved contact with minors.
Well, he said this. One of the things that brought this whole situation to light was that he wanted to go to a celebrity home in California and install this type of technology, and he didn't want to give the particulars with regard to his. Possible contact with the minor children of that celebrity. And whether the homes are occupied or not, the question is whether this type of requirement is reasonable under the circumstances. And just to give you a personal example, I live in a community now that's under construction, and I live in the part of the community that's the last part to be constructed. But the earlier parts of, that were constructed, their children living in those homes. And so when they were coming to the back part of my community to construct my home, they were encountering children. And so that could be a circumstance that could be an issue here. And all the probation officer was asking was for him to tell probation what was afoot so that the probation officer could make an assessment of the risk in conjunction with condition number 13, which was imposed in sentencing, which the defendant never objected to, and he hasn't challenged it on appeal. So we didn't ask for a change or a cease change or a shift. We just asked the court to tell us how it was that court wanted the probation officer to go about assessing the risk that the court had already told the probation officer it needed to assess.
Has the probation officer offered a justification for the switch in enforcement of the internet access provision?
Well, as I understand what happened was, if you look at the probation memo, there were changes in probation officers. And so once this came to light, as far as exactly what was afoot with regard to the defendant's occupation, there was a belief that there needed to be a greater disclosure with regard to what was going on with regard to his business, because they wanted to, and this is for the protection of the defendant as well, in that everybody needs to know what's going on so that we know what the risks are, because we don't want You know, nobody on probation wants him to fail the supervision. We want to know exactly what's going on. And if there are no risks, if he had gone to probation and said, well, I'm building a vet's home, that building is totally unoccupied. If he told probation that, probation could have given him the go ahead to go into the home and install the technology. But if he said, well, I'm going into the vet's home and the probation officer comes down and he notices that the two units next to mine, there are five units in my building, the two units next to mine have children in them, he might have made a different assessment. But the question
was, are you alleging that these new conditions are because he did not share appropriate information, or that there is a new probation officer who had a different approach?
What I'm stating based upon my view of the record is that information came to light about exactly what was going on. Because like I said, this came to a head when he needed permission to travel to California. And when he needed permission to travel to California, the probation officer got into the specifics about what this would entail, what type of job it was. And as I read the probation's memo, the defendant wasn't really forthcoming about whether or not, or may have been confused about whether or not there were actual children, not actual children, but children actually living in the home, minor children. And so the probation officer wanted to get to the bottom of who was going to be there, what were the lodging conditions. And rather than divulge that information, the defendant said, I'm not going to take the job. Well, armed with that information, the probation officer says, well, I need to have a means by which I can understand exactly where you're working, the circumstances under which you're working, who's going to be there, what's going to be afoot, and then I can make an assessment as to whether or not there's a risk, and I can make an assessment as to whether or not you can work there, and I can make an assessment about what you need to divulge to your potential client. That's the question.
Isn't Mr. Forguera barred from places like playgrounds and parks and that sort of thing?
The judge said in the order in response to the probation officer's request is that if he's constructing at a place where children
but that wasn't my question. Listen to my question.
Sorry.
Is he barred from parks or playgrounds or any other just places where children generally may be?
Yes, that was a part of the original conditions of supervision.
Thank you.
Ms. Rhodes, you referenced the probation memo. Is this the July 2017 memo that was referenced in your brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that memo in the record?
I thought that it was a part of the court file.
I was unable to find it, so I wasn't sure if you could point me to it.
Oh, I don't know. I have it as a part of my case file. I thought that the memoranda were a part of the court file that would have been forwarded to the 11th Circuit.
I will double check. I wasn't able to locate it. I noticed that you had referenced it, and we tried to track it down.
Yes, I'm sorry. And the date of it, Your Honor, is June 18, 2027. And
2017.
Okay. If I misspoke, it's
2017. Okay. I've got a question about your view of the Packingham case. Setting aside whether it applies here or not, or whether he's got the right to bring up that case right now or not, do you think that Packingham, there's been some discussion of Packingham saying that more limited restrictions were allowable, but do you think that meant more limited in terms of how many people they applied to, or more limited in terms of the scope of those restrictions?
I just want to reiterate that we think that Packingham that consideration of Packingham is not within the scope of 35 3583E1 because constitutionality of a supervised release condition is not one of the enumerated factors that the court's supposed to be considering in modification or termination. So I just wanted to state that. And Packingham, we don't think that it applies at all on the merits, but Packingham suggests that even certain narrowly tailored restrictions are appropriate. And we would certainly assert that this is a narrowly tailored restriction because, number one, it's directly related to the type of harm that is afoot in these cases. And we haven't found any cases that have struck down these types of restrictions as being unduly burdensome or unduly restrictive. And also, the court has said that because the defendant can seek modification of these types of restrictions and also appellate review, that's another, those are also considerations for the court to take into consideration in upholding these types of restrictions.
But if he cannot bring up the constitutional issue in a modification proceeding, and if we can't consider that on appellate review, then how does that solve the Packingham problem?
Well, the Packingham problem should have been addressed in his objections to the condition of supervised release, because essentially it's the same condition that was imposed in 2013. So he could have asserted a Packingham issue on direct appeal. He could have asserted a Packingham issue in a 2255 motion. And we'd also point out that, notwithstanding whether Packingham should or should not apply, his appeal waiver would preclude him from pursuing a challenge to a supervised release conditions or any aspect of a sentence on appeal. He waived that.
And Ms. Rose, even assuming that the Packingham challenge is well taken, what effect would this court's recent decision in U.S. v. Bobol in 2020 have on that challenge?
Well, it invalidates the challenge, I would say. I was going to get to whether or not the court had received my 28-day letter when we had started on Bobol, and it seems to suggest that his Packingham issue is dead on arrival before this court. And with the time I have left, if I could, I would just like to assert that there is no reason for you to guess as far as the reasons for the district court's denial of the motions for modification, early termination, and clarification. The court said that it denied those motions based upon its determination in 2013 that the supervised release constrictions were necessary. And then it also referred back to its 2017 order where it ruled on the probation's request for clarification. And being that the defendants in their brief admit that his motions described at length why he should have his supervision modified or terminated, including an analysis of Section 3553A factors, the government presented argument against Mr. Cordero's motions. There was ample briefing on the application of the 3553A factors. The court simply said, I hear what you're saying, government. I hear what you're saying, defendant. I hear what you're saying, probation officer. But I want the conditions that I imposed in 2013 and that I ratified in 2017 kept in place. And that was a reasonable decision. There's no abuse of discretion. So we would ask this court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Rhodes.
Thank you.
Ms. Brewer?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, with regards to the Packingham ruling, it does say that it's a fatal problem in that particular law was a wide sweep and that it precluded large numbers of websites that are most unlikely to facilitate the commission of a sex crime against a child. And I think with this restriction, it is the same type of restriction. With regards to the Bobel case, I think that that case perhaps allowed what Mr. Cordero originally had, because Mr. Bobel's sentence did include a lifetime term of supervised release. And during that time, he could not use a computer except for work and with the permission of the district court. But in Mr. Cordero's case, it's not like we can go to the court and say, can he use the computer for work purposes? He has been restricted to having to get written approval every time he wants to use the computer. So it's even more restricted than what the Bobel case seems to indicate to me in the ruling.
What about whether the Packingham challenge is permissible in seeking modification of the conditions of supervised release?
Well, Your Honor, I know that one of the conditions, I know the court has to consider under 3583E2 a number of factors. And one of the pertinent factors is the need to provide the defendant with training and education. Certainly, the restrictions that this defendant has in today's world restrict him tremendously with regards to training and education, which he cannot access, nor can anyone in his household access that, except that his wife can use her smartphone. So I believe that we can say that a modification of the term of supervised release can happen under the pertinent facts if one considers that the need to provide the defendant with training and education is a pertinent fact that this internet restriction is not allowing.
All right. Well, Ms. Brewer, thank you. And I do note, as you mentioned, that you were CJA appointed to this case, and we thank you for doing so. Ms. Rhodes, we thank you as well. And we have your case under submission. And now I will call the next case.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.